Hey, this is Chad Sakach. You're listening to the face-meltingly awesome Virtually Speaking podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
Winning.
Viva Las Vegas.
Woohoo!
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 11. My name is Pete Fletcher, aka Pedro Arrow, and joining me as always is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm hungry, actually, right now. I'm thinking some tamales after this show's recorded. But I love that intro, by the way. I mean, except I want to say Viva Las Vivals.
Like, yes, Viva Las Vivals. That's going to be the remix. We'll have to do that for the next time we have a Vivals episode. We'll do a Viva Las Vivals. So, my goodness, what a week. Welcome back home. My goodness, we spent the last week in Las Vegas, as you might imagine, and we were at EMC World, my very first EMC World, as a matter of fact. So that was pretty exciting. Did you have a good time?
I had a lot of fun. It was my first one, too. By the way, a week is way too long to spend in Vegas.
True. I'm good for about 3 days, you know, like a little trade show, a little bit of gambling, a little bit of horrible karaoke, and then I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it starts to blur together and you realize that every place is really just the same place with a different interior decorator.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. They all look the same. But yeah, the time that we were in the trade show, the time that we were actually at EMC World was pretty exciting. If you didn't get to go there, I highly recommend you go to their website. I guess it's EMC World. And check out some of the, at least check out the keynotes, because they were pretty amazing. Especially day two, when Chad Sakach was on talking about both Unity and VxRail. Really cool demos they did. And it's just really cool tech. So I was also very impressed about the booth that we put on. I mean, the VVol section was right next to the vSAN section, which was right next to the VxRail section. And that was one hot corner, man. It was like fighting for room to talk to people, and I'm not kidding. It was just constant conversation, given it is a storage trade show. But yeah, there was lots of great conversations. We were fortunate enough to grab some of those. And so yeah, let's start walking through some of those. John, the first one I have is from a guy named Hanek. He worked the VxRail booth the whole time we were there, and here's what he had to say.
I'm here with Hanek Iron. He's been working the VxRail conversation all day. How you doing, Hanek?
I'm doing great. We've had a great show here, a lot of interest in our new product.
I know you've been busy there talking to people all day. Why don't you give me the 5-minute pitch, or the 3-minute pitch, if you will, about what VxRail is?
Yeah, so VxRail is a hyperconverged appliance exclusively developed by EMC and VMware, and marketed through VCE, EMC. It was announced and launched in February, so we are 2.5 months into it with a great deal of momentum, a lot of customer interest in it.
Awesome. Now, I'm pretty familiar with the EvoRail solution. Can you tell me a little bit about what the differences are between EvoRail and, say, and VxRail?
Yeah, so, I mean, it can be looked at, I think, as a successor to the EvoRail program. As I said, it's the EvoRail solution was offered by a number of what we call them QEPs. This is an exclusive offer by VMware and EMC with a lot of evolution in the product in terms of pricing flexibility and number of models that we bring to the market. The other aspect is trying to be with VxRail very close to the release cycle of vSAN and vSphere, so we can actually bring those innovations very quickly to our customers.
Okay, so vSAN is tied into the VxRail, or is it separate?
Absolutely. So you can look at it, you know, it's basically the software inside it is the VMware Hyperconverged software, right? So it has pre-built vSAN, vSphere, vCenter to manage the cluster, as well as LogInsight. When you buy the appliance, you get those elements, except that vSphere, you can bring your own vSphere. So the appliance that not includes vSphere, you can leverage existing ELAs and whatever for the vSphere, but it's designed to be a appliance that is completely built with a VMware hyperconverged software.
Oh, that's very smart. That's really cool that you can bring your own licenses then, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so let me be clear. The bring your own license apply to vSphere. It does not apply to the vSAN. vSAN comes with a box, right? So each appliance includes the vSAN license.
Excellent. Fair enough. So there are several versions of this VxRail out there, right? How many different versions do you guys have?
right?
Yeah, at this point, we're taking orders for 9 models. There are 4 hybrid models and 5 all-flash models, ranging in pricing, configuration, performance, you know, all the way starting from 60K at the low end for the low-end hybrid model to quite a bit more for the high-end, the VxRail 280 all-flash model that can go all the way to 19 terabyte per single server. Each appliance includes 4 servers, so 76 terabytes per appliance.
Wow, that's pretty significant. So does somebody go to a VMware to buy it, or they get it from EMC, or both? How does that work?
As I mentioned, the product is a VCE product. So you buy it through EMC and VCE and their partners. But VMware is very much involved in the sales cycle, so we are partnering with EMC VCE to sell the product.
Excellent. Well, last question for you. Where can I go if I want to find more specifics around the VxRail solutions that are out there?
Yeah, it's very easy. Just go to the VCE site and look for the VxRail section, and there's a lot of information on that site available for you.
Awesome. Well, your line is getting longer and longer here, so I'm going to go let you talk some more VxRail. Hanik, thanks for taking time to be on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, be sure to go to vce.com and find all the details. Like he was saying, they've got the hybrid, the all-flash versions. These things scale up to 64 nodes. Quite an impressive appliance.
Yeah, it was great. I hung around the VxRail booth some too, and it was really interesting to see the customer questions, see the customer excitement, see the partners, and it was really good to see that people weren't just finding out about the product. They already knew about the product. They were coming to the booth purposely to ask specific questions, and they were ready to get some VxRail in their data center.
Yeah, so as far as vVols goes, it was the vVols show, in my opinion. I mean, all the keynotes talked about virtual volumes. Unity came out with support for virtual volumes at the keynote, which was pretty cool. And our booth was filled the entire time talking about vVols. Not only did we have the technical marketing team there and the product managers, but we also had the main developer manager of virtual volumes for VMware, Patrick Dirks. And he was talking to customers the entire time, every single day. So I grabbed a couple of minutes with him, and here's what he had to say.
Patrick, first time at EMC World?
Yeah, first time. Very fun to be at a show that doesn't totally revolve around VMware. Kind of different crowd.
Yeah. So I've seen you over here at the vVols station working pretty hard for 3 days in a row. What are your takeaways?
Well, there's a lot of interest in vVol. It was mentioned in the vMax intro and in the Unity intro, so a lot of customers are actually coming to us actually curious about vVol. And, you know, everybody loves to hear about vVol, a lot of interest. And everybody agrees, LUNs suck.
Well said. So give us one of your standout conversations that you might have with one of the customers.
Well, I actually had 2 interesting conversations. One with somebody who came looking for interesting insights in space consumption, and they wanted to know about VROps and things like that. And when we got to talking about vVols, the kind of light bulb went off, and he said, well, wait a minute, if I have this, then I can actually just look at the data store and see what's really being used at the array level. And he was very excited about that. And I talked to somebody else who was the sole admin for hundreds of hosts and thousands of VMs, and the idea of stopping, you know, spending his time on individual onesie twosie LUN creation and going with a vVol model where he just partitions it up front and lets it go beyond that was really exciting to him.
Oh yeah, I bet. That's awesome. All right, well, you got a line on your booth. Get back to the line.
All right, back to work. Thank you.
Gotta love Pat. He cracked me up with the LUN suck. The other thing that was funny, John, I don't know if you know Pat, how well you know Patrick, but he's a developer at heart, and so he was very entertained by the whole marketing and sales process, you know, how we were, you have to stamp this, you have to give this conversation, you can win a prize, you know. He was more like, we just want to talk tech. We don't care about all this other gimmicky stuff. Welcome to the trade show.
Yeah, no, people kept asking me about that. I'm like, I think the stamps are over there. I don't know. I'm just here to answer questions. I'm still confused by it myself, but you go to enough trade shows, and you get enough of, what do you call them, tchotchkes or whatever the various gimmicks are and, yep, and prizes. And I think I just got burned out on it a couple of years ago. So I try not to even think about it. But
oh, yeah. My first trade show, I went home with a million of them for my young daughter. And but then after a trade show or two, I had this like horrible, like almost like buyer's remorse, but tchotchke remorse. I'd look in my bag and be like, why do I have all this stuff? But it was so exciting to see these blinky lights when I was on the trade show floor.
Yeah, the things are so cool when you're there and you're like, oh, another phone charger that will work once. Yeah. Like, I mean, the things are sometimes disposable. Of course, I say this while wielding a laser pointer that came from the Austin V-Mug, so... Yeah. Occasionally I do get stuff, but
the next one we have is a vSAN conversation. Jeff Hunter, who did the vSAN 6.2 podcast a few weeks ago, he was on site and he was talking to customers the entire time about vSAN, and he was sharing booth duty with you and also Jace. The whole team was out there representing, but here's what Jeff had to say.
So Jeff, we're here at the VMworld booth at EMC. I know you've been holding court over here at the vSAN booth, so why don't you share with us maybe some of the conversations you had or your overall opinion about how the trade show's been going so far.
Yeah, certainly, Pete. So lots of interest in VxRail. That booth is like right next to the vSAN booth here, so a lot of interest in that. Also a lot of interest in vSAN itself. I mean, a steady flow of people. I swear Monday night there was probably the line 5 and 6 deep at some points. Lots of good conversations too, and it's everything from, hey, how does this work, to where can I use it? Use case was a big one. We talked about virtual desktops a little bit. That was a popular topic as far as use cases are concerned. Folks were also looking at it for remote office, branch office. So some of the conversations went down the licensing path, right? Because with robo licensing, you can do per VM as opposed to per CPU, which is how vSAN is normally licensed. So that was some of the conversations there. And then we got into the tech too as well. And we were whiteboarding how deduplication and compression work. And folks are very excited. Some folks had not heard that we released vSAN 6.2, which it's been out for a little while now. So for you folks out there that haven't heard, it's out there. You can do deduplication compression and erasure coding on all-flash vSAN. It's available today.
Oh, yeah.
It'll soon be available on VxRail as well, or VxRail, excuse me. So again, tons of customer excitement here. We have service providers also looking at vSAN. So they're wanting to divvy that up and use that as their shared storage behind everything that they provide to their customers. So there's really no use case that's off limits for vSAN.
Right, right.
I think we pretty much hit every use case that I could think of out there. We talked about DR a little bit with a couple of folks. We talked about management clusters. I mentioned VDI earlier. So there really isn't too many places where vSAN does not make sense. That was kind of the big takeaway that I had. The other thing that I like about it too is before we got into the tech piece of vSAN, I would try to step back and help the customers understand how storage policy-based management is really the key piece to it, right? It's all about keeping it simple. I'm a keep it simple kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
And that totally resonated, with me when I first heard about it, several moons ago. And as customers come up to the vSAN booth and to the vVol booth, for that matter, too, and they hear about storage policy-based management, you can just see the light bulb come on.
Yep.
It's like, wow, this is the way it should be, right? So if you're looking at, traditional storage, so arrays or whatever, or for vSAN, make sure you spend some time on storage policy-based management too, because really that is the magic sauce there.
Oh yeah, and the light bulb moment I saw for a couple of customers was, they were, because the vVol booth is right across the hall here from the vSAN booth, and so talking about storage policy-based management with them as it pertains to vVols, and then them talking to vSAN, they're like, wait a minute, these actually work together? And that just really, that light bulb moment comes on and people are like, okay, now I'm in. Because then they realize it's not about vSAN, it's not about vVols, it's really about policy-based management.
That's right. It's about not having to worry about what type of data store I have back there. I just want to give some storage to my VMs with the right level of availability and performance, and all I got to do is put a policy on that. It's a beautiful thing.
Well said, man. All right, back to your booth.
Thank you, Pete.
It was interesting to hear just the hanging out at the vSAN booth, the diverse use cases.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting hearing different people's requirements for availability or uptime or performance. Legitimately, the most demanding people I talked to this time was not anyone with the military, not anyone in a hospital. It was some guys who managed casinos. Like, you talk about the amount of money they could lose in a couple minutes of downtime. It was actually fairly crazy. And the level of obsession with uptime, it actually was casino managers, which is appropriate. We were in Vegas, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about that. You'd think that the bigger use cases are going to be healthcare or something mission critical, but yeah, money is mission critical, I guess.
They were definitely ready to spend some serious money to make sure their money kept flowing. So,
another side note, by the way, as we're listening to Jeff Hunter, somebody came up to me, one of the listeners from the podcast, and they grabbed John and I and said, hey, we love the podcast. We love what you guys are doing. We resell vSAN a lot. And we've listened to the episode on 6.2 about 15 times, and we know it backwards. And so when we go into our sales meetings, we actually recreate that podcast for some of our customers, and we just have so much fun doing it. It's really helpful. And so thanks to the folks out there that are listening and sharing all that positive feedback. I did share that information with Jeff, and he was very humbled. So good stuff. All right, well, moving right along, the next conversation I had was with a gentleman by the name of Ken Wernerberg, who happens to be the manager for the technical marketing team in the storage and availability business unit. John, he's our boss, Mr. Ken Wernerberg. Here's what Ken had to say.
On the final day of EMC World here with Mr. Ken Wernerberg, the infamous Lund Suck guy. Ken, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Awesome, man. So tell me, how was your EMC world?
It was good. Busy as these things always are, right? Running around, trying to catch meetings, trying to talk to customers, trying to catch some of the announcements. Just busy, but, you know, as always, fulfilling it.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. This being my first EMC world, lots of announcements, lots of really cool things coming out. Unity seemed good. VxRail. Did you have any good conversations with anybody or any thoughts? Maybe some of the keynotes. Any takeaways?
Well, you know, obviously being in VMware in the storage and availability group here, I think it's always kind of cool to see some of these technologies that we're producing being represented at, you know, industry events and things like that that aren't even necessarily VMworld. I think one of the big things, you know, VxRail has been announced, but, you know, people being able to see it and look at it and touch it is really, you know, it was exciting. I know that you were down at the booth.
Yep.
Yeah, and being able to walk around and just see people coming up and asking about it and saying, oh, this is it, oh, I could touch it. And just seeing, you know, hardware is always very cool, but knowing that this is our software that's at the core of, you know, virtual SAN, you know, pieces like that sitting within the VxRail stuff is always very cool.
Yeah, we had a chance to talk with Chad earlier, and he was telling us that the numbers for VxRail are just insane right now. They are just lining up to buy this product, which I thought was pretty exciting.
Yeah, and fundamentally, you know, things like virtual SAN are what enables that sort of technology and gives them that abstraction, gives them the ability to manage by policy and all the rest of that stuff that, you know, the customers are clearly clamoring for. So it's kind of cool to you know, have our technology at the spearhead of that.
Absolutely. Did you get a chance to take a look at Unity this week?
Yeah, man, that one's awesome too. I mean, first of all, having things like all flash arrays, great price point at that, but also, you know, much like with VxRail and virtual SAN, virtual volumes, which I don't know if you're aware of virtual volumes.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, have you? It's a pretty cool technology.
Yeah, LUNs suck.
Yes, they do. So also just seeing some of the excitement around that Unity and knowing that virtual volumes is right at the core of that. And again, storage policy-based management, being able to, you know, attach unique policies to individual virtual machines and have the arrays understand that technology and be able to implement them. Seeing something like Unity coming along that also has that software aspect of it, that software definition, and some of the excitement, and really, you know, Twitter went ablaze. And,
yep.
Yeah. So just seeing the reaction to that stuff, and it's kind of nice actually being relatively anonymous at EMC World as opposed to something like VMworld. So we could sit there and actually get a more direct sort of feedback from the customer base. If they're looking at something, you know, you can ask them, what do you think of virtual volumes? And they're like, oh man, this is going to change everything. So, you know, it really fulfilling. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, this is pretty much a primer for VMworld. I mean, we had a lot of buzz at the booth talking about virtual volumes, talking about Unity, talking about VxRail, vSAN. I mean, this, even the VMware team, I have to say, because it's a big company, we focus on a lot of things, more than just storage. And so some of the other business units, when they saw how much interest there was in the storage side, it was really cool to see that buzz around the storage. And to me, that was just a big primer for VMworld. So really looking forward to gear up and start talking about some more vSAN, some more virtual volumes, some more SRM. So VMworld is right around the corner.
Yeah, man, it's about time we edumacate those other business units about our product sets. So, yeah.
Well said. Yeah. All right, I'm going to let you go, man. Have a safe flight home, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, buddy. Have fun.
So the last conversation we have is from Chad Sakic. He's the president of Converged Platform Division, formerly known as VCE. Great conversation. He is just a true geek at heart. If you haven't been on his website, then you're probably not in IT. But I'll give it to you anyway. Virtual Geek is the place to go. He's got tons of great blog posts out there, both for Unity and VxRail and just about anything else that's either VMware. So definitely check out Virtual Geek. So here's Chad.
All right. We are sitting with someone who is no stranger to VMware or EMC, the one and only Mr. Chad Sakic, president of Converge Platforms Division, formerly known as VCE. Chad, first question, do you have a sign like Prince, you know, formerly known as VCE?
That's awesome. Peter, John, it's good to be with you guys. The logo is still the same, but yeah, I think actually we should go through that period. That I think if I'm going to do that, though, I actually want the guitar made to match the logo just like Prince
nice.
Did. I actually wore the purple jacket on day 3 of EMC World,
yeah.
Just as a little bit of a Prince shout out.
Beautiful. Yeah. Awesome. So listen, we're not going to take too much of your time. You've been putting out blog post after blog post this past couple of weeks, rapid fire. You're talking about Project Nitro, Project Skyline, Native Hybrid Cloud, all kinds of things. But we wanted to sort of hone into some of the stuff you've been talking about this week about Unity and of course, VxRail. So why don't you start by giving us sort of the 101 on VxRail?
VxRail is the industry's most kick-butt hyper-converged appliance on the market for customers who are using vSphere as their standard, right? Customers who are standardized on VMware They're going to get the best experience. It's a simple, easy turnkey appliance. It comes with everything that you need. It can get installed and up and running in 9 minutes. It leverages vSAN 6.2, which is awesome and face-meltingly awesome. Come on.
Steve. Yeah.
Compression, dedupe, erasure encoding, stretch cluster use cases. But the main thing is it's a hyper-converged appliance where the VMware and EMC teams, there's actually a single engineering team that co-develops the product. And it is awesome. And by the way, it is literally flying off the shelf. So if anyone's interested in one, you should order now because it's as hard to get as the Oculus Rift because literally, we had a business plan just like for anything. And every week we're needing to double the forecast, which is the hardware inventory. So right now there's a 5-week lead time. We're trying to shrink that down just because demand's overwhelming.
Yeah, so certainly the booth, even at VMware, there were booths for VxRail, obviously, at EMC, but also in the VMware booth, we had a VxRail, and it was blowing up like gangbusters.
Yeah, no, I mean, there were VxRail booths all over the place. I mean, there were two in EMC, there was one over with Land Rover, Brocade had one, we had one. And one of the brilliant things that was done at this conference, previously, when we have hardware at the VMware booth, it's generally under a glass. People were wanting to pull drives out. They were taking selfies with it. Can we open this bay? I was practically expecting someone to start licking one of the VX rails. Like, it was, people love hardware. They really do.
So look, in the end, it's all about the software, really, right? But people do love hardware. It's true. Now, were you guys in the day two keynote?
I was disappointed that you didn't have one of those virtual explorations of it.
Do you want to hear the story behind the story?
Yes.
So basically, for those of you that were not there, you should go back and you should watch the online at emcworld.com. Day two keynote. These events, you always want to focus on the technology and what's cool and customers, but you have to add some zazz.
Yes.
Right? Like a little bit of sizzle. So that means you do some stunts. We did stunts on day two and on day three. The stunt on day two was that we had this really cool motion capture rig, which would basically have like 300 cameras that would render you in real time into a 3D rendering engine, specifically the Unity engine that's behind Unreal 4.
Yep.
And we would do a demo. And done by this startup in New York called Organic Reality. I know this is a little bit of a long-winded story, but there's a good, the payout's good. So I visit them on Wednesday before, EMC World's going to start. And we're like, okay, we're going to do a little dry run just to see how the flow works and all that sort of stuff. And it didn't work. The system didn't work for more than 10 seconds. And so we flew into New York for nothing because we left without being able to actually see this thing in flight at all. But we're like, listen, these events always have a little bit of
hiccup,
chaos, you know. So let's roll with it. So we show up on Sunday. Everything's getting built out. Is it working yet? No, but don't worry. By Monday, when we're going to do the dress rehearsal, it'll be completely working. So Monday night at 8:00, the whole gang that's going to be there on day two come in. And we start doing the rehearsal, complete epic fail. Nothing's working, right? We're like, we thought this was going to be, and they're like, oh my God, I can't figure out what's going on. They actually flew in a professional Unreal Unity game developer.
Nice.
To then go and opt, because it turned out that basically the 3D models had too many polygons and too many texture maps. It was too big, so it was crushing the GPUs that were doing the rendering.
Right.
So they're like, look, we will have this fixed by the morning. Right now, for everybody who's listening, the actual event starts at 10:00 and the doors open at 9:00, right? So we're like, are you serious? Because we have done no dress rehearsals, right?
That's crazy because it actually looked amazing.
There's more. So we show up at 6:00 in the morning and only the Unity version of the motion capture was working because there was originally a Unity one and a VCE one.
I figured, yeah.
The VCE content at 7:00 in the morning, we went, okay, Audible, we've got to completely recreate all of the content, right? Because there was no content made, right? And then we're like, how are we going to, we have to do the teardown. The teardown is, like, I have to find, and we're like, quickly, send someone to the trade show, grab one of those VxRail appliances, and then like we did the teardown on stage, and literally we did the one and only kind of run through like 2 minutes before the doors open. It was nuts.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah, he's got execs like, yeah, grab that server and throw it on this little plastic table and we're going to break this thing down.
This is the great thing about having hardware laying all over the floor. So
Yeah, exactly.
So it's been a hit.
So one quick question for those of the folks that are familiar with EvoRail. Yep. What are some of the key differences between EvoRail and VxRail?
So there's actually several. The first big one that's important, again, people think about an offer most about feature, function, and price. I actually looked at an offer and look and go, what is the structure of the engineering team? Previously, the EvoRail program had this idea that the VMware team would develop a product and then drive it through an ecosystem.
Right.
Where there was no closed loop feedback between the people who are driving into the market and the product itself.
Sure.
Now that's the root cause, that's the meta, right? What that resulted in is EvoRail started around 150, realistically about 180K per appliance. VxRail starts at 60K per appliance.
That's crazy. That's a bit difference on the go-to-market.
The second thing is that EvoRail required the customers to repay for vSphere and vSAN licensing. VxRail does not.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I mean, because if you're an enterprise customer, you don't really want to rebuy something.
The second thing is that, like, look, inside this market, you need to have things that are small, simple, and easy, and Evo did that. But there's also a couple things that you need to do that are kind of like market requirements at this point, which is, you know, just absolutely phenomenal dedupe, compression, and then stuff above and beyond that, like erasure coding, stretch clusters, all that sort of stuff. And VxRail does that, EvoRail did not. The other thing that I think is just really kind of key is that EvoRail only had one hardware type.
Yeah.
Right? And look, it's not about the hardware, it's about the software, but not all customers are the same. And VxRail has currently four variations in hybrid and in all-flash configurations, which is eight. And by the way, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, there's a lot more node types coming to a theater near you soon. The fifth thing is actually the VxRail manager code. A lot of people think it's the EvoRail manager code. It's about 50-50. We kept about 50% of the code, about 50% of it is net new. In the next major software update, which is arriving here at the end of the month, it's going to be around, you know, 30 old, 70 new. And then we've got a September update where we're looking at things like currently every VxRail deployment always will install a vCenter on the first VxRail node and appliance deployed, which is great for like Robo and some use cases.
Right.
But then some customers are like, I don't want vCenter to be on every cluster.
Of course.
Right? Like if you're Walmart and you have, you know, 5,000 branch locations, you don't want to have 5,000 vCenter instances, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are actually quite different. In fact, we even debated about whether the names were too similar because people would associate them with being the same.
Ah, yeah, sure. Well, that's good. Well, speaking of net new, mm-hmm. you guys came out with Unity this week, which is pretty amazing. So I know you don't have a lot of time, but why don't you just give us a little bit of a difference between VNX and Unity? And for those of you that hear this, also go to Chad's blog because he's got some great, great breakdown on Unity. But go ahead and tell us the difference.
So first things first, thank you. It's great. I'm glad that you guys are pumped about it. You know, again, there's a lot of people who think the world is going to all go hyper-converged. And you know, who knows, we'll see over time. Today, the vast majority of the market for customers that are starting, you know, and want something small and easy and turnkey still actually go the path of servers and then an external storage target attached. Now, by the way, I think that some of them are missing the boat because vSAN is awesome. Scale.io for customers that want to go heterogeneous. SDS is for reals, people, right?
Yeah.
It's not a passing fad.
We're at fourth generation here, but yeah, exactly. It's a great place to be.
But, you know, there are a lot of customers who want something that's an external storage target that's simple and easy to use, and off you go. First of all, it's designed to start really, really small. So it's 2U is you know, the starting form factor. And there's no longer any storage processor data mover model, which was the model of a VNX, right? Now, I'll explain the tech behind this in a second, but that's the first big difference. The second big difference is we've completely integrated the file system to the block abstraction layer. By the way, this is something that I would describe as us making it like a modern unified array. You know, this is more... For customers that are familiar with how NetApp operates or how Nimble or Tintree operate, it's more common. Historically, in VNX land, you'd have the block layer that would present a LUN, and then you'd layer the file system on the LUN, right? And that meant that certain features or functions like snapshots or replication would work one way for block land and another way for file land, right?
Exactly.
In this case, the file system is directly mated to the block mapping layer. And so all of their behavior, snaps, replicas, all that stuff, operators want. Third big thing, all HTML5, no Java Unisphere.
Thank God. Right. Yeah, it's... Java needs to die. Yes. Java needs to die.
So it's lickety split fast. It's a beautiful UI. We had independent people kind of assess us relative to other players that who shall rename nameless, but who are widely respected for having great, simple, and easy to use products, and Unity smoked on all fronts. Four starts at 10K list for hybrid configs and 18K list for all flash configs. This makes it the cheapest, lowest entry cost if you're in marketing.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I might buy one of those for my house. I mean,
yeah, seriously.
Well, you don't need to because they have a virtual. They have a virtual one that you can do, and there's a community version of that, right?
That's right. So basically, it's available as either a physical thing. It's available as a VSA that you can download. If you go to www.emc.com/getunity, everyone can just download it and have a party. In fact, it's a great way to play with both the NAS and block implementation of vVols.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Because it's fully supporting vVols. It's got deep vSphere integration, integration to vCenter, all that stuff. The last thing that I think is cool, it is very optimized for flash configs, right? We've completely redesigned the whole I/O path. Again, like for people who say, oh, this is the same thing as a VNX, look, they're obviously all the stuff that I've already highlighted means that it's completely a new beast.
Yeah, there's no single-threaded Flare code that all the RAID logic's passing through anymore. You can actually use all the cores in that.
Exactly, and it runs actually on a SUSE kernel that all of those functions that I just described are actually running as containers, right? So it's a containerized core Linux OS on top of which it's super awesome. But optimizing for flash means that, you know, a lot of performance in a tiny little package, right? So, you know, that 2U footprint, you know, is a beast. But the biggest configurations, if you were to scale it up and add a lot more spindles, it's basically about three times the performance of a similarly configured VNX.
Yeah.
So it's a rocket, and frankly, you know, it was kind of, we were talking about it during a PR and analyst session. They were like, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, your competitors are slogging you on? We're like, look, we also talk to them. They're friends of ours too. Right. You know what I mean? Like, while we compete, you know, our industry's small enough.
Exactly.
Look, they're freaked out. Like, what are they gonna say? Well,
there was this general consensus for a while there when the first all flash players came about that you had to greenfield from your code from the beginning. There was no way to teach an old dog new tricks and take these old code bases and somehow update them and change that engine out and be ready for all flash.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, look, the reality of it is that you can white sheet paper it, and that was the path of Extreme IO, and then you end up with certain things that are very difficult to add post facto, right? So we're going to be, you can do dedupe on a Unity platform, and you can even do a compression at GA. They're not inline, they're post-processed. So again, right, more familiar to like NetApp customers in its core behavior, right? Now we will be adding an inline compression in Q2. It'll be a free, you know, software download and update.
Oh, nice.
But doing a full-blown inline dedupe is very hard if you didn't think about it in advance. In the case of like vSAN, for example, they could have never added that, you know, into the original 1.0 or 1.5 path. But when you guys did the 5.5, then 6.0 path, where you updated the underlying block mapping layer.
We changed the complete file system. You actually evacuate a node, and I mean, we've done it twice, and that's one of the reasons why we're an object system, so we can change that out.
You know, those you know, inline deduplication is something that requires a bit of a green sheet paper.
Yep.
But you can see that you can get a ton of leverage out of these mature platforms by updating them in ways where you don't completely, you're not starting from a blank sheet, but you're starting a very clean sheet. And for anyone who's interested in engineering storage stacks, the blog post on Virtual Geek is cool because the story actually started 7 years ago, where we basically said, how will we get rid of the legacy Clarion Solera base that is happily deployed at 100, 200, 300,000 customers? Like vSAN's cooking. And it's currently at about 3,000 customers.
3,500, right? But yeah. No,
right.
But yeah, you're right. It's one of those things is when you're earlier on, you're not having to, you know, the benefit of that old code base. I remember there was one blog post you talked about. It takes years to stabilize and harden a code base. Yeah. But the challenge of that is when you want to change that hardened code base, you don't want to radically start over and change everything, and kind of the slow iterative process of picking and choosing the design things that were designed around 1998, decisions or magnetic disc, yep, or things like that. It's,
and put it this way, everybody who is in our business knows that whether it's software defined, an external storage array or whatever, the worst IT day is a bad storage day.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right? It's the one thing that, no storage of emotion is going to save your bacon. No DRS or VMHA if you completely vaporized the VVOL or the underlying VMFS data store, right?
Yep, yep.
So these storage stacks need to be a rock, right? Which is why it's so important that vSAN, frankly, is on version 4, right? And here, what we've done with Unity is pretty cool. We've changed the engine on the car with the wheels, new paint job, and completely new frame, and we did it while we're barreling down the highway supporting 300,000 customers.
Yeah, make sure you go to Virtual Geek and see the blog post, because there's a great picture that really defines that. That you got this car with driving on two wheels, and these guys are changing the tires while the car's
actually
driving.
There's a video on YouTube of these guys are going down the highway, that's like 40, 50 miles an hour, and they put it up on two wheels and they changed the two wheels. And
insanity.
Yeah. I think that it's A, awesome. B, like, what? I've always wondered certain sports, like, how you would start. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you look at ski jumping, and I don't mean, like, jumping up high, but, like, the flips and the turns and the acrobatic ski. I'm like, how does one do your first attempt at that?
Right. How do you get to that?
To that point. So then the question is, like, how did you kind of first try to, like, hey, maybe I could put the car on two wheels and change it? Like,
yeah.
Those guys got a lot of time on their hands.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I know you're busy. One more for the road here.
Yeah, sure.
We would really like to hear your thoughts on the acquisition, on the merger, EMC-Dell.
What's the one thing about the merger that you're most excited about that people aren't necessarily aware of? What's the one benefit that isn't necessarily getting the most headline?
So this is, again, for technology, I'm a nerd and a geek, which means that the first dimension that I look at it is I go, wow, this will be awesome that we'll be able to accelerate VxRail, better supply chain, newer and faster Skylake platforms, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That VX rack systems that deploy, I've had customers here that literally are deploying 13 petabytes of scale IO for a heterogeneous data center deployment. One customer deploying 500 nodes of VX rack. Frankly, being able to leverage Dell supply chain, again, will be incredible, great innovation, great stuff. Okay. However, that's the nerd in me, right? So this is the mini wheat, like the white side and the,
Right.
So the thing that people miss that is the biggest thing, I'm going to pose the question back to you guys. Watch this. It's going to be a question Q&A.
Okay.
Do you think that the infrastructure ecosystem is starting to commoditize? Yes or no?
Yes. I mean, if you look at, take switching, for instance, I mean, over 10% of switches that are shipping are white box using, reference, standard commodity silicon.
I completely agree.
Okay, so agreed. Okay, me too, right? Second question. Do you think that tomorrow, and let's let tomorrow be kind of an abstract idea, not like literally tomorrow, more consumption will be in a utilitized consumption model than it is today? Meaning it's not a capital purchase like give me, $50,000, but instead it's a pay-as-you-go.
Pay-as-you-go model. Yeah, I think that's getting a lot more popular. Certainly Amazon was one of the early adapters of that pay-as-you-go model, and I think that blew up like gangbusters.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere from, manufacturing areas that have always tried to optimize the return on investment capital to just customers who are trying to understand the value they're getting out of IT. Anything you can do to move that to an OPEX cost makes IT more transparent to the business and helps you make new strategic bets because you can see the value.
Good. So I think we all agree, right? So now watch this. Why is it that whether you're talking to EMC or HP or Cisco or IBM, they really want you to buy some capital? I mean, what's stopping us? Or VMware, by the way. Why do they want to sell you the ELA? Why don't all these companies say, I'll give it to you on the drip?
Because they answer to the market and quarter-to-quarter numbers, and that transition point, transitioning to an operational, a consistent long-term ELA model, you take a short-term hit and your numbers.
Bingo. So, nerds don't think about this, and I mean that with love to you nerds out there, because, hey, that's me too. We tend not to think about the business constructs of the IT industry, whether it's software or hardware, any publicly traded company has only three things that they are measured on that materially affect the performance of the company, and they have to do it every 90 days. Those three things are revenue, earnings per share, right, which is profitability per divided by the, you know, earnings divided by the number of shares, and what's your outlook? Is it up? Is it flat? Is it down?
Yeah.
If you listen to any earnings call, those are the three, you know, they get wrapped around with great new products and great win stories and what, but that's the thing that, you know, if, you know, did you meet your revenue goal? Did you beat your EPS goal? And then, you know, is it a forecast, right? By the way, congrats on the great Q1 for VMware.
Yeah.
Now, the weird thing is that in our industry, putting customers on a utility model ultimately is actually good for the vendor and for the customer, because customers tend to consume more in a utility model, whether it's AWS, Azure, Office 365, or Salesforce.com, or Workday, or any of these SaaS offerings, right? So why don't we do it? The answer has nothing to do with your rep wanting to be pushy and wanting to... That rep has got a sales manager who's inspecting him, and that sales manager has someone who's inspecting him, who has someone who's inspecting him, who has someone who's inspecting him. And the reason why is ultimately the CEO is inspecting them, because he has to report to the street revenue in quarter, earnings per share in quarter.
Right.
We will be the largest, we'll be the largest provider of IT capabilities in the market, period. But we will also be a private entity, which means that we don't care anymore if it's best for a customer to want it as capital that they depreciate, you got it.
Right.
If you want to have it as a utility, you got it. We've got great technologies in Dell and in EMC, and of course with our brothers and sisters at VMware and at Pivotal, it's face-meltingly awesome.
Sure.
And our strategy is great. But the thing that I was waking up as a leader in the team with losing sleep over and, you know, waking up in a cold sweat is I saw no way for us to transition towards this utilitized economic model without blowing a couple quarters. And in the public markets, if you miss a quarter, you get punished so profoundly.
Absolutely.
You then start to, like, you know, cut R&D, start to lay off people, and you can see this happening at IBM.
Activist investors at Citrix trying to shut down R&D.
Yeah, it's so a lot of badness happens for things that actually are kind of stupid and short-sighted.
Yeah, there's not a non-disruptive migration model for this change of business technology ideas, right?
Yeah, and you know, people don't entirely think about it, but listen, AWS was born within Amazon as a retailer. In fact, while AWS is enormous and growing and awesome and going to be part of the ecosystem, and we believe in the hybrid cloud, right?
Yeah.
The reason that they could do it is because it's a knit inside the revenue flow of Amazon.
Of Amazon, right.
Right. Likewise, Microsoft can make the pivot, and Satya Nadella's doing a great job. They can make the pivot because they're in, you know, $180 billion a year, I think, you know, revenue kind of company, which means that, yeah, they can make the pivot towards a service and they can transition it, right? But that's not true of IBM. It's not true of HP. It's not true of EMC or VMware.
Yeah, if you move capital, because, yeah, Microsoft's primarily revenue stream is reoccurring ELAs, and they can bundle in some Azure into those ELAs and introduce and transition those customers.
Transition over time, right? So I was like, well, man, we are going to be in a real world of hurt here if we can't figure this out. And we're going to have to bite the bullet one day, right? And that's going to be a really bad day.
Take the hit.
What I didn't think of, and this is why Michael Dell perhaps is a billionaire and I am not, right, is that the answer is really simple and clear. We've got great companies that produce great cash, who've got great customers, and customers love them. Equity markets, it's a really good time. The cost of capital and cost of equity is low. Get money, just $60 billion, no problem. And get a loan.
Yeah.
And you take a private.
Yeah, and you can also take longer and longer ELA or longer and longer OPEX commitments from the customer to offset that, and it's very easy math for you to do.
Like, if you think about it, basically, imagine going to your vendor and saying, I would like to do a 7-year utilitized model. Most vendors today would go, no.
Not me.
Right? Like, I'm struggling to figure out how I can get you to buy it this quarter, 100% of it, right?
If you can tie that against a long-term bond and debt's cheap, everyone wins.
And look, ultimately, you know, as a private entity, we can basically gear our business model. We got great technology, great strategy. VMware will remain autonomous, which is important.
Oh, yes.
And Pivotal will remain autonomous, which is important. But we've got great power within the set of companies. the one thing that will be a superpower isn't a technology thing, it's going to be this business thing.
I agree. I had not thought about that, and so I think that's a great answer. What about you?
Oh, yeah. No. It's the finance nerd in me was very excited about this. I mean, yeah, it's we'll still have an independently floating stock over here at VMware, but at the end of the day, our majority shareholder will be a private entity. So outside of fiduciary duty, you know, have to, you know, make intelligent decisions. We no longer really answer to the street, too, by proxy.
And just to you know, while the market is always right in the long term about the choices it makes, by the way, it doesn't always necessarily mean the best technology wins, but ultimately somebody wins and somebody loses. The public equities market, the exchanges and core indices, they're very short term oriented.
They're at the blackjack table. They're that side bet that's got the wacky odds. Like, yeah. That's my opinion.
So, you know, we will be able to make the right decisions for the customers and the business and not be thinking about this 90-day shot clock.
Right. Because that's so, Bush League.
Yeah, it's Bush League, and frankly, you know, anyone who thinks it's a good idea should be taken out to the woodshed.
Absolutely. All right, well, on that note, I know you're busy. We want to thank you for coming on, and we want to extend an invitation to you to come on to the Virtually Speaking podcast anytime. Chad, thanks.
I would love to, Peter. John, thank you so much, man.
All right, this was great.
What I really loved about this conversation is Chad, you know, like us, is very much a geek at heart about the technology, but it was great him breaking down, I guess, the large economic forces that, you know, rule our existence in technology companies. Yeah. And it's stuff. He broke it down in a very simple way, in a very conversational way. And it's good to have some perspective, because a lot of times when people see large companies do certain things, they say, oh, that's really silly. Why would they do that? Or why don't they do that? Or why does no one, you know, look out for the long term? And he really, I don't know, he broke it down and explained it. And, you know, it's not that people are dumb. It's just the nature is the reality of the market. So,
yeah, always good to talk to Chad. I've been following him for a while, ever since the heydays between him and Vaughn, as they used to always argue back and forth and co-present, you know, but still have good friendship. So really good to get a chance and hear his opinion of not only the technology that's out there now for EMC, but also his input on the merger, I thought was pretty awesome. So thank you, Chad, for coming on, and we look forward to having you on in a future episode. All right. Well, before we go, one little side note for you guys, a little behind the scenes, if you will. Last episode, we had about 6 minutes of dead air at the very end of the episode. And then the payoff at the end of that 6 minutes was nothing more than
woohoo.
That was a mistake, but that was, you know, but nonetheless, we did get a couple of emails of people asking about that, and they actually waited the entire 6 minutes. And so with that in mind, I'm going to have something at the very end of this episode. So if you're curious and you want to stick around and hear it, then be my guest. If not, then we understand. I will give you a hint. You're going to have to really enjoy horribly sounding karaoke music to appreciate it. But
that's all, folks.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're bringing in Cormac Hogan to talk some VAIO, vSphere APIs for IO filtering. So until then, bye for now.
Winning.
You're Bush League.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still with us? Oh, you waited. All right. You must like bad karaoke. So here's the deal. One of the days that we were there, we decided to go to this dive bar. It was Ken Werneberg's idea. Anyway, we decided to listen to some horrible karaoke, and that made for a very, you know, very interesting night. And so one of the songs was just absolutely horrible, so I decided to whip out my phone and record it. And you are now the benefit of that recording, so enjoy. Call the gym.
Oh.